Welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm talking to Christine Landon-Smith and Sudha Butcher, joint artistic directors of Tamasha Theatre Company. It's a very big moment in the company's partnership. We are sitting here on the eve of Christine's departure from Tamasha to take up a new role as a lecturer in acting at the National Institute of Dramatic Arts, Sydney. Congratulations, Christine, and a big decision.
Thank you, Simon. Yes, it is a big decision. I mean, I guess when you set up a company, you never sort of foresee the day that you might step out of something that you've created and lovingly looked after for so many years. But yes, I think somehow, you know, after 23 years working with the company and building it with Sudha over time into a very robust organisation, I certainly do feel it's right for me to move on. This opportunity came up. I have been moving into intracultural actor training. NIDA has asked me to lead with my intracultural expertise, which is of great interest. And so I think, you know, certainly, although it's bittersweet, I think for both Sudha and myself and the company, it does present an opportunity, and certainly I feel that the organisation is strong and, you know, is in itself excited to perhaps take a new direction. So, yeah, feels like the right moment.
So you're going back to your old school, essentially. You trained at NIDA.
I did a very short training there, but I have taught there on occasion. And certainly it's my hometown. Yes, it was where I was brought up.
Okay, we'll come back to the intercultural acting process that you've pioneered with Tamasha in a few minutes. This is a key moment for Tamasha, Sudha. You've had 23 years together. You began as friends. You've worked on 24 productions, including the latest, The Arrival, which just finished. And the friendship and the partnership is going to be completely altered. How do you feel about that?
Well, obviously, as Chris said, it is a hugely emotional time. You know, we can't deny that. And, you know, certainly for many, many years, up till quite recently, both Christine and I used to say, oh, well, Tamasha is you and me, and if one of us moved on, we wouldn't want to run it without the other. But I think, you know, this has sort of become totally clear to us when you look at, you know, 100 people are coming tonight. We have 1,000 TDA artists. I think it's no longer a reality that we go, oh, well, if one of us isn't doing it, the other one is going to shut up shop. Because we recognise that Tamasha is bigger than the sum of our parts. You know, there is a need for it. It's our absolute duty and wish that it would continue, you know, beyond us. So we were already thinking about, you know, succession plans. We see it as a company with an identity that can be, you know, passed on. And it's far too important. What I would now say is, you know, you literally do look around and the amount of emails and messages we get about, you know, people who have come on a course, they've had a mini commission, they've done a scratch night, and they'll say, oh, there was this frisson of something and I met so-and-so and now I'm doing this, you know, thank you to Tamasha. Of course, you've got the sort of, you know, big examples like Ishi Din, who came on our course and 3 years later wrote Snookered and is now out in the industry. You know, there are many of those examples. So it's becoming very, very clear that, you know, Tamasha is in the landscape because we are providing stories that aren't there, and there's a need for it to carry on.
You said 100 people are coming tonight, so we are sitting here at Rich Mix, where your offices are based, Christine and Sudha. It's a far cry from the days when you began in your front room in North London.
It is a far cry from Crouch End, when Sudha and I produced Untouchable almost single-handedly from my flat in Crouch End with just one typewriter. Yes, it is. We now have a, as I said, you know, robust organisation, a phenomenal producing team. As Sudha says, a huge community of artists around us. Yes, it's thrilling to see where the organisation is from its very sort of modest beginnings.
In fact, we've just been to India recently and it was lovely to go back to the NSD. I believe it was outside there that you did Untouchable.
That is the National School of Drama, Delhi.
That's
where
right.
You did.
Yes.
Well, as I said, we're at Rich Mix. There is a bit of a leaving due for you, and you've got people from the industry coming, which is great. Sudha just mentioned that you went back to India recently, or she
I went back to India recently.
And you went to the National School of Drama, Delhi, which is where you were inspired to do your first show, Untouchable. This is a long time ago, you know, 1989. Maybe some of our Theatre Voice listeners were not even born then. It would be really good to share what the aims of the company were in 1989. Why did you decide to set up a theatre company, the two of you, your actor friends, working together?
Well, I think it was very simple. I mean, I think Sudha and I had a shared passion and vision to bring stories of the Asian diaspora to the British stage. I mean, we were not seeing those stories on a consistent basis. Yes, I think that Untouchable was the catalyst to do that. I mean, Untouchable was a classic novel adapted, but it was done in a sort of naturalistic style, and it was a very true story about, you know, a latrine sweeper in the 1930s India, but could just as well have been a story about someone on the streets of India today. And I think, yes, from that we wanted to tell contemporary stories about, you know, Asian diasporic communities. And that's what we did.
I've been reading some stuff about you that's been documented now in a couple of critical books. You know, one is the University of Exeter Documented History, edited by Graham Lay and Sarah Dadswell, where I think he's researched through your archive, and it said that your aim was to promote the Asian actor-producer to enable you to exercise your own artistic choice.
Well, I think that was definitely, you know, as an actor, I was finding that you weren't always going up for great parts. So, you know, alongside the journey of Tamasha was sort of my journey as, you know, finding roles for myself and also writing things, because, you know, you'd go up for Casualty and all people would say was, you know, put your hair up and does that thing in your nose come out, you know. And so you were just wanting to have more meaningful, you know, more carve yourself a future rather than just waiting for fate to come knocking. So I think that was very much part of it, where we took into our own hands the making of our work.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's just, I think, to take a sort of leading position in an industry can only, be a good thing for the community of artists that you're, you know, where your sensibilities lie.
But I think also, to be fair, at the time we literally did have, you know, we started the ball rolling. One show led to the next. I don't think Chris and I in those early years sat down and said, "Oh, we're forming a theatre company." In fact, I was recently reminded that the first time the Arts Council asked us to apply for revenue funding, we actually said no. And I remember us sitting at some cafe and going, "Chris, shall we do this?" You know, and both of us were, "Oh God, but that's a responsibility." You know, we loved the idea that we went with a project that we were passionate about. By the second time, obviously, East is East had happened, and that was a different story.
That was the second time you were asked to apply for funding.
Well, and then it was very clear that, you know, that's the direction we needed to go and we wanted to go. But in those early years, we were just working by, you know, project to project.
So Untouchable followed House of the Sun. Then,
Women of the Dust, yeah, Shaft of Sunlight.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's interesting that your work, you know, you've done a range of work. They've been what you might call slice of life dramas, verbatim theatre, musical. It's been a range of work. But one thing has always been, I suppose, a through line through it, and that is your way of working with the actor. And over time, you have pioneered this intracultural method of working, and I just wondered if you'd care to talk a little bit about it, Christine. Because I have actor friends who always tell me they regret never had the opportunity to work with you, especially now that you're moving to Australia.
Well, that's very flattering. I mean, I work in a way where I put the actor first. And by putting the actor first, you know, that means I work with their whole being, which means I work with their personality, and for me that also includes their cultural context. And I guess the more I've done it, and the more I've articulated it, and the more I've observed, and the more I've looked at a whole range of practices, I can see that often, you know, actors are not allowed to bring their cultural heritage to the rehearsal room, and without anybody saying it, often a particular culture dominates, and often it is the white British. And I find in those circumstances that any minority culture in the rehearsal room often can't find a voice. And I have seen time and time again that often an artist's artistic power can reside in their cultural context. Yeah, so I think a whole range of actors feel very comfortable in our rehearsal rooms, in our training rooms. You know, one actor said, "Oh, this is like the top of a London bus," because you know everybody comes to that rehearsal room and feels that they will be able to explore where their power lies, and even if they themselves don't quite understand that their power can lie in them being exactly who they are. Yeah, I guess now we have a reputation for that practice, and people come and they do make those discoveries.
I mean, we're trying to distill your 23 years practice in a few sentences for the sake of this interview, but I know that you spend a lot of time working in the school's environment, honing this process, acting process, and now you're doing some study around it, Christine?
Will we see a book about this? Embarking on a PhD on intracultural actor training. Yes.
Yeah. Mm. So in years to come, there may well be something available for other actors and directors to be able to use.
That's the aim, to see whether I can actually document and shape and write a methodology, a rehearsal practice. Mm.
Okay, well...
I think obviously we'll have Dr. Landon Smith in due course. And the other side of it, of course, is this huge canon of work, you know, not just Tamasha, but, you know, the artists of different cultures have what can become quite an invisible canon of work. And that's why, you know, part of the thing is very, very important for us that work is there, accessible, you know, TDA artists. For instance, they were looking at partition and they wouldn't know that, you know, three plays already exist about that.
Well,
and
now
they can do that. They can go and there's a resource. There's, you know.
Sudha, I think you need to explain a little bit more the evolution of Tamasha. You began as a company that were documenting the Asian experience on stage with a certain type of authenticity and realism. But over the last decade, you've evolved a little more wider. And
I think, everything, in a sense, has evolved quite organically. Yes, you're very right that we were always, Christine and I, were always interested in the personal. So, you know, if we did the political things like the partition, we were interested in what ordinary people went through. And so we wrote a play called A Tainted Dawn, which was less about the politics and more about how people were affected. And that approach...
That opened the Edinburgh International Festival.
In 1997, that's right. And I think everything that we've done, and that very much chimes with how Chris works on a personal basis with the actor, has been about, you know, the small person's story. And through that, you weave a bigger picture. And, you know, the arrival couldn't be more epic. But at the heart, you know, it sits... You find the Nigerian man who left his son, you know, and there's the beautiful scene of... So even when circus artists are involved and Christine is experimenting in genre, at the heart, I think, we still have that signature of we're looking at the personal, we're looking at the political through the personal. We have a series of work at the moment which is under the umbrella title of Small Lives, Global Ties. So even though, you know, we have moved away, we're not, every project of ours is not a British Asian story. And that's because you see the evolving, you know, the changing nature of this country, the diasporas and the artists that are knocking on our doors saying, there's no place for us, you know, we need to carve a place for us.
So you've set up a arm, as if I may call it that, of Tamasha called the Tamasha Developing Artists, where you encourage new writers, actors, directors.
Yes, I think TDA, which is Tamasha Developing Artists, is again something that started quite organically. Christine and Sita had been working in schools and they did this project called Lyrical MC, which came out of the verbatim interviews and the cultural interplay between children in a North London school. And we showcased that in an education conference, and it was immediately obvious that, you know, teachers had felt nervous about playing with people's cultures. Often people felt that integration was about making people not feel that they had to bring their other selves into the classroom. And that's how it started. you know, so TDA started in that way from, you know, Chris's work in the educational environment, but really it now encompasses, you know, we have training courses, masterclasses, writing courses, directing, actors, masterclasses, and people are under commissions. You know, we have different stages of from development commission to full commission. And Snookered is the example of how somebody went right the way through that ladder. And so is Sweet Cider. You know, Imtiaz came on a course.
Imtiaz Hussain,
who wrote Sweet Cider, came on a writing course, then had a development commission, then a full commission, then a production. And Christine runs, you know, has been running director actor labs, design direct. We commission through people who come from the courses. We have regular scratch nights.
You mentioned Sita. Do you mean Sita Brahmachari, who was an education consultant with Tamasha and now was the co-creator of The Arrival?
Yeah, she and I did Lyrical MC together, and she and I then have just co-created The Arrival together.
Which is actually a bit of a departure also for your work, because it's more a site-specific, performance-based production as opposed to text-led,
It's different in the sense that it is probably, you know, the most physical piece of theatre that we've done, and it is a mix of physical theatre, sound, soundscape, composition, projection, and I think that sort of multi-layered, multidisciplinary project we haven't done quite in that way before. Yeah, when I say it's a physical theatre piece, we were working with circus artists, and in a way, the collaboration with Circus Space afforded us the time. I mean, that took 4 years to develop. And with that significant partner, being able to have rehearsal space, guidance, expertise in kind, it meant that over 4 years we could develop that work. And you know, certainly for a piece of, you know, that nature, that size, that complexity, it was very useful to be able to have you know, the time to do that.
So we're sitting here in a quiet space of Rich Mix, but it's not really quiet because we've got sounds of music.
Many arrivals through. And departures.
Yes, we are in a little lounge, aren't we? So in case...
Which hopefully you're going to edit out, but not, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter. So. Yeah, and we're trying to rush through a bit of an overview of the company in 23 years. So from your point of view, what have been the highs and the lows of the company?
Well, lots of highs and a few lows and challenges. I mean, I think the highs was all, I mean, that early excitement, wasn't it, Chris, when you found a great book you wanted to adapt and then the author gave you the rights and then you found the money and you found the collaborators. You know, things like, I think in those days, you know, there were two occasions when you picked up the phone and before you knew it, I mean, I remember being 32 weeks pregnant, I wasn't supposed to be on a flight and going on a day trip to Edinburgh and coming back with a deal, you know, those kind of highs. And of course, our highs of making the work, you know, a fine balance, Rohint and Mystery giving us the rights.
Yeah, I mean, I think every project we've done, I mean, it has been a succession of highs, because I think every project you do and you commit to, you know, you don't do it lightly and you love it. And you find something that you, you know, as an artist, you really want to work on. And in a way, that has been the privilege of Tamasha, that we've been able to work on projects, you know, off our taste, off our liking, of our sensibility, and then, you know, put the creative teams together and deliver them and develop an audience for that work. And, you know, yes, whether it's Fine Balance, whether it's Balti Kings, whether it's Child of the Divide, whether it's The Arrival, they all have their own particular excitement attached to them.
And of course, you were very much part of the whole pioneering the audiences for our work.
What about the lows? Have there been many lows in the company?
I think the lows were always to do with how you sometimes are viewed as audience developers, not as artists. I mean, it would be fair to say, you know, that the lows of a BME artist are that you can often work running on empty, because you might make the most significant piece of work which attracts a significant audience. But in a sense, you know, it's on a parallel journey to supposedly the mainstream. You know, so we have had occasions when we felt we've made some of our best work and it has come and gone in another universe, you know. And, you know, obviously having to articulate yourself as to what you are when you do a classic.
You know, I mean, you're talking about the Bilkis Bibi show.
Well, not, I mean, in particular one thing, but, you know, just in general, you know, I think there is more of an onus on the artists to articulate themselves, whereas the luxury of letting the work speak can sometimes be missing. But, you know, I think there are, we've been robust enough to face those. And other artists coming up can learn from, you know, how we face them.
So, I mean, are you going to, what's the future then? Are you going to move into being more of a training ground for new artists? How will you replace Christine?
I think that, you know, before Christine realised that she got this job and, you know, decided to go, we had talked about what happens beyond our tenure. And certainly we had made it overtly clear that we didn't see ourselves staying forever, that Tamasha was not going to end when Chris and I go. So now I am here to provide the continuity, but also to be at the forefront of finding the next artistic leadership, which we hope to do over the next, you know, certainly within 2 years. But, you know, we're looking now, because I'd like somebody to come in and help shape the vision of how the company might look. And it's very, I don't think we can prescribe what it might be.
So, Christine, from your point of view, what's the future hold for you immediately?
Yes, well, immediately I'm starting my new job. I mean, I'm flying out on Sunday and getting to Australia on Tuesday and starting the following Monday. So, you know, I'll be thrown into, you know, my new job, not have time to think for a while. But I think certainly, as Sudha says, you know, in terms of Tamasha going forward, we're looking for a new leadership and to work with Sudha over the next couple of years and then take the organisation on. And you know, I think we both feel very optimistic. You know, the company has a very particular identity, and obviously we want somebody coming in who understands and has a synergy with intercultural work and telling those very particular stories that we tell 24/7. You know, they'll have a free rein as well to refresh and take the organisation, you know, in a new direction. And I think that's very exciting. And I think it's you know, one feels very proud that you can leave a legacy, you can leave an infrastructure that you've built for somebody to come in and take that on.
What about funding and things like that? How is the theatrical
landscape
changed?
Well, I mean, I think clearly, you know, it is a difficult time financially for the arts. You know, we can't disguise that it's challenging, both in terms of we've had to absorb local council cuts, you know, arts council cuts, etc. But then, you know, there's a very different way of producing and being entrepreneurial, which I hope that, you know, a new perspective coming in will, you know, there, we do have funding, we do have secure NPO funding until spring 2015, and certainly the Arts Council are working with us. They are excited at the idea that we're looking at succession. They're going to be part of the, you know, recruitment process. So we would hope, touch wood, that they have a will to, you know, continue to invest in the future. But obviously a lot of that is dependent on the next bid, you know, and how it puts on the goes on the table alongside everything else that's going to be there. So, you know, nobody can sort of predict all that.
That's right.
Okay, well, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Christine and Sudha for talking to Theatre Voice. I know it's a bit of a quick overview, but best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Simon.
Great.
We'll talk to your successor later. Okay, thank you very much.